Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Hey, Tommy. It's Ben Vanell here. It's great to be here on Filthy Casuals, the podcast we do together.
I agree.
It's good to be here, just you and me, Tommy. Mm. Just here to rap about games... as we do every week.
Yeah, just the two of us. Yeah. Just two boys chopping it up.
Yep.
Just a duo, a double act.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. No guests, yep. No features.
This famous chemistry that we have, just one-on-one.
Just crackling already. The air is sparking with electricity.
I can't do this.
Well, you're in luck because we actually have a very special guest today. He's a longtime fan of the show. He won a lottery to be a special guest.
I think it was
episode.
A chocolate bar that had a golden ticket in
yes,
it.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it was a coin flip between your two fans, but all right.
Oh, he got us there.
Yeah. Hey, Adam.
It's me, Adam Knox. What's up, boys? Mm. Now the electricity's crackling.
There we go.
Yeah, yes.
There we go. The main switch has been jacked on.
I was all like revved up and ready as well to do like a fake 90s thing. I was going to like a... there's been an explosion at Professor Grossenstein's laboratory, and now it's making candy.
Ooh.
Do you remember those fucking
Dr.
things in
Horrible?
The 90s?
Yeah. Yes.
I've been thinking about those that whole time.
Yes.
Because we're talking about the late 90s, the thing where it's like, pour the goop
what
into
was
the
all those
glove.
Toys? Yeah, where you could make your own disgusting...
This venereal disease looks like a jube.
I don't think I ever had one of them, but I remember them seeming a little bit in the same realm as Lego to me, where it's fun to make
way?
It's fun to make the thing. Like any kit
but
where it's like,
it
make
doesn't
this,
taste very good.
And then you're just left with it. It's like, I've just assembled this thing now and now what?
Yeah.
I have a shitty model of Hogwarts that doesn't really look that much like the real thing.
My ex bought me some Lego not that long ago.
Okay.
To make.
Yeah.
Okay. When I built it said, I'm breaking up with you.
Wow, you got all the way through that 70-page instruction thing.
It took forever. Yeah. Because they don't use words in Lego, so any age can make it.
Yes.
I didn't really realize what it was saying.
You thought it was going to be the Millennium Falcon.
At what point of constructing this phrase did you realize you were being broken up with? Yeah. Like, as you're making the K, you're like... oh, I don't feel good about this.
Well, they get you to do it in all separate segments, so it didn't make sense until I put it on. No, it was like a little moon car, and the process of building it was very relaxing. I was a bit stressed out, and it was a very nice gesture at the time to do a thing, but now I've got this fucking Lego thing that every time I look at it, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But I'm also aware of how expensive Lego is. So I'm like, if I throw it away, that's like me wasting my own money at this point.
Yeah.
You haven't thought of just like therapeutic, like...
Lego smash.
Or take it apart and make something else with it.
Oh.
A bachelor pad or something like that.
You could take the remnants of a broken thing and then reconstruct them. No, I'm still at the point where that Lego's got too much self-doubt in it to think it'll ever be reconstructed again.
Dr. Dreadful, I've spent the entire time trying to look up what you were talking about. Dr. Dreadful's lab was that toy. We had it, me and my sister. And
I think there were a few different ones.
There would have been maybe different, different countries had different names for it or something.
Yeah.
It tasted like shit. It was disgusting.
Yeah. Well, it was you get like a little, if someone's too young to remember this or didn't have parents, that like
full stop didn't have parents.
sure.
Would be
probably
a great reason for not having had access to this.
Well, parents that were very comfortable with them just consuming chemicals.
Yeah,
right.
I remember like in the 90s, my parents were always like, if it has 110 or 102 in it, those are the bad chemicals for whatever reason. Like the preservatives, it would list the different numbers.
Yeah.
And whatever they are, 110 and 102 were always the bad ones.
Mm-hmm. I remember when
another fucking like mineral with a number attached to it, they're like, probably fine.
Yeah.
If they've given it a number. The scientist made this. I'm sure it's edible.
I remember being a little kid and I think maybe my grandparents getting me as a birthday present like a glow in the dark quilt set, like okay. a doona cover and then a pillow cover.
That's make it so hard to sleep.
Really counterintuitive. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
Well, then my dad wouldn't let me use the pillowcase. Like he took the pillowcase off the bed after like one night because he was like, this glow in the dark shit, there's something's going to be up with this. It's going to give you fucking brain cancer if you're just like lying on this like glow in the dark.
When did he take it away?
Yeah. yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think then when I did get sick as a child.
Yeah.
A couple of years after this, I'm sure there was a small part of him that was like, fucking pillowcase. I knew it. One night is all it takes.
Oh.
Made in Chernobyl. Oh, all right. I guess I'll sleep under this.
Just walking around the ward in the children's hospital trying to like gather other people to launch a class action against Glow Zone.
For I had those
reckless.
The glow in the dark stars attached to the ceiling. Yeah. No roof is what I'm talking about. I slept outside for most of my childhood. They were a 90s bedroom thing.
Yes.
The bane of any parent that had to move house with their child and then eventually like get that shit off the ceiling.
I feel like we definitely moved into a house or two that had that shit remaining. Because we moved a fair bit when I was in like the late 90s. We were renting a bunch of different places and whatever for some reason.
Mm-hmm. You were on the run.
I remember my parents always arguing about like covering something up.
Yeah.
Getting away with it. Sure, like murder or something. I don't know.
Right. And you moved countries too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We came here
from... There's no extradition between the UK and Australia. You're the dumbest criminals.
I've only got some dition. We can get away with some dition. Extradition would be too much.
Yeah.
But anyway, I remember moving into places with... We rented a place for a bit in around this late 90s period. There was a bright pink house and inside it had like an intercom and a sauna. It was small.
Oh, wow.
But someone had clearly gone fucking mental and built all this crazy shit into this small house and then painted it bright pink. I was playing with that intercom when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Damn, that was cool. I got stuck in a cupboard because I was always running around.
Was there an intercom in the cupboard?
Well, it's... No. No, of course not. That's why I got stuck. I'd be able to...
Sure, that's... Yeah, yeah.
But like running around that house, pretend it was like a secret agent base was very fun. I made the sauna into my office when I was a child. That was a game I played. Isn't it? Had an office.
The sauna.
Yes.
Well, because it was
like
just,
owned
it was,
penthouse, it would be your office,
I doubt it would have worked it as a sauna. I don't think we ever used it as that. It was just like a little tiny, tiny fucking ex-pantry.
Like wood panels.
Yeah. With, I think it had like one of those, what do you call them? Not a brazier, but a brazier.
Sure.
A brazier is what you wear.
Over the shoulder boulder holder.
That's the one.
What you were looking for. There's a sauna in my apartment building that has been inactive for the entire time I've lived there.
Mm.
There's just been a sign. I've lived there for 2 years now, coming up on 2 years. Mm. And when I moved in, there was a sign just very vaguely saying the sauna isn't working, and it's been there the entire time.
Mm.
And then about 2.5 months ago, new sign on the door saying, the sauna is closed due to the outbreak of the coronavirus. I'm like, what an incredible rebranding by my building manager. Yes. Just really saying like, hang on a minute, there's an opportunity here for me to be off the hook from doing absolutely fuck all behind my little desk every day.
This broken door is now closed due to coronavirus as well. We're not going to fix it because of coronavirus.
I want to make an offer to like, because I imagine that that's probably something that's a big chance of just now never coming back in the building, in an apartment building sense. But it's
even if it was there, you wouldn't want to be the person to use it, because if you go in and you're the first person to set it up and do everything, some other cunt's going to come in there and it's going to be an old man who's very comfortable with his body.
Yeah.
Someone's going to wander in.
But this is the thing. It's right, as you guys will know, it's right next to my apartment.
Right.
So my apartment is like the closest to this sauna.
Right.
So I want to make a play. I want to like make an offer to...
Like it's passed.
It's next to the pool.
Yeah, sure,
I want to make an offer to the building manager and just be like, what if I just slip you a little money each month and then this becomes my personal sauna?
What a way.
Put a little lock on the door and then it's just purely mine.
Well...
You'll never use it. Knowing
that I had my own little personal sauna in the building, it'd be a nice feeling.
But it's broken. Yeah. You know that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
What's the point of...
I'll fix it.
How?
You'll fix it.
What do you know about saunas?
I'll work it out.
If for it to be broken enough, all a sauna is it like a sealed room that has some ventilation,
has
steam, I guess, to breathe.
Yeah.
And then a hot pile of rocks. Mm. What do you know about hot rocks?
I guess I could just turn my apartment into a sauna. You're right. Good point.
That's not what I'm saying.
Turn the shower on. Sit outside and just wait for the room to fill up.
Yeah.
Boil some water. Close all the windows.
Yeah. Saunas are the fucking worst. Why would you want this anyway? I've never, ever enjoyed the feeling.
The first minute before you remember how shit it is, real good.
No.
Because
you can't breathe immediately as you go in there. Breathing is one of my most favorite things. I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm off it.
Yeah, it's.
I'm starting to get a bit over it.
At the moment,
this last couple of
months,
it's been more of a hindrance.
I've been holding my breath more often in more places, genuinely, for the last 2 months than I ever have in my life.
But we're here to talk today about the late '90s. So where were we at the end of last week's episode? We wrapped up the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. We wrapped up the Mega Drive. We wrapped up the PC. We didn't wrap up PC gaming, but
we just started talking about PC gaming.
All the other weird little consoles that came out, like the 3DO and shit, they've come and gone by the time from like 93 to 95. They're just... they have disappeared already. The Virtual Boy we didn't talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But that popped up towards the end there.
That was a big famous failure of Nintendo's.
Mm.
I guess the reason probably that a lot of those CD-based consoles that were around from sort of 93 to 95 died a definite death was what happened in 1994.
Sure.
The most successful CD-based console to be released in the world.
Yeah.
The PlayStation.
The Sega Saturn. Oh. the Saturn, I think, came out before the PlayStation.
I think you might be right. Those are both 1994. Actually.
November 94 in Japan for the Saturn. December 94 for the PlayStation. So
yeah,
they're around the same time. And going into it, Sega was still a huge name.
Mm-hmm.
The Saturn was... their next thing. They'd had some fuck ups and people were confused about their hardware because of the 32X and the Sega CD.
Yep.
So they weren't coming into it in the best position from that respect, but they were a more well-known player. Do you remember when, we're all old enough to remember this, when Microsoft put out the first Xbox, which we'll talk about next episode. However, it was like, Microsoft?
Yeah.
Bleh.
Yes.
What do they know about video games? Sony had the same attitude around them at this time.
Mm.
When it was all being announced and talked about, but the big difference between the launch of the Saturn and the PlayStation was that everyone was getting really into 3D at time. And the PlayStation was built to be good at 3D and the Saturn was not.
Yeah.
Saturn was focused around being really good at 2D, which it was. But that seemed antiquated.
Oh, it's an insane move for them, right? Like, this was being discussed in the years previous.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we can talk about now the whole Nintendo, Sony, CD-based console thing.
Yeah.
But that was already on the horizon. 3D graphics and large media to support that was the next thing.
At the time, I think it was more that 3D hadn't reached that point where it seemed particularly possible.
Right.
Or doable well. And Sega was developing the Saturn, I guess, so... because you're making a console, you're making it, you know, fucking years beforehand, I guess.
Yeah.
So... they're doing it at the time when 2D is still just fine. And that cultural shift of people thinking, and they thought it very quickly.
Mm.
Like 95, it was already like, 2D games are old. That means they're bad.
Yeah,
we are no longer interested
in them. This is a good point to make because we've come back around. Like, and I think we all remember the shift back towards like pixel art style and 2D games, which happened in the last decade.
Ish,
maybe less, yeah, but... I remember so vividly the sort of year or two where 2D games became, like you said, antiquated and embarrassing and old-fashioned, and it happens now.
It's a hard cut.
Oh, yeah.
They're still putting out 2D games for this entire generation, you know, in parts, but all of them are criticized for having that. People view it as though it's a lack of effort or a lack of skill to make something 2D instead of 3D, which is bonkers to think about now.
Yeah.
But yeah, very much at the time, 3D was the new big boy. 2D, just a little tiny boy. Yeah. And who likes a little boy?
Not me.
No one worth.
Not me.
No.
That's for sure.
I'm halfway through reading a book called 500 Years Later, which is a an expanded kind of version of an oral history of Final Fantasy VII that the guy wrote for Polygon.
Yes.
Polygon? Yeah. Yeah. And the beginning of it is kind of all about this. So that franchise is maybe one of the best examples of the decision of developers taking the leap from 2D to 3D outside of Mario, but that's almost a different one because that's them. That's kind of like a showpiece for their hardware that Nintendo have also developed. But yeah, they come to the end of the line with the Super Nintendo, and it's pretty clear, like the writing's on the wall. Like, okay, this is the talk that 3D is going to be the next thing, and we kind of can't really get away with doing another 2D pixel art one. So we've got to look at the future.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to like change up how we've done this. And it's very like, it's very overwhelming to them. Like they have to run all these tests and have all these tech demos. They famously don't, they go back and forth between which hardware they should make it for. Should they make it for the PlayStation or should they make it for the Nintendo 64? And like, it just ends up coming down to like, which one is going to be, have the better hardware for their vision.
And the storage media was a big deal as well, because like there's that demo that is out on the internet of like an early sort of tech test thing for a Final Fantasy game in 3D, and it's the characters from 6 rendered in 3D in a very Nintendo 64 looking way.
Right.
Apparently it wasn't made like deliberately be like, this is what it looked like on the 64. It was just made with like those really fucking expensive work desks.
It's a silicon...
It's like Apple Pixar shit. But it was like a test to see, can we make a battle system working this way? Can we make it look good? What does this end up looking like? And it's like a 3D rendered battle thing, but they realized very quickly that the size of it and the difficulty in developing and the amount of extra time it took to develop 3D environments meant that with the decision the Final Fantasy made, they wanted the pre-rendered background with fewer 3D proper rendered assets on top of it.
Yeah.
For the sake of A, time, and B, like power, how it looks.
And even considering all of that, Final Fantasy VII still had to be on 3 discs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 like CDs.
So, and that was a huge thing for them was that, they didn't. And that they didn't have like recorded music. It was all like, I think it was called Redbook Audio. It was like MIDI on the PlayStation basically.
Right.
It was very light files because it's just data telling it which note to play.
They talk to the composer in this book, and he's really interesting where he like, it's pretty compressed, the audio, because otherwise the game was just taking so long to load. Mm. And then he remembers like looking back on it not that long after it had come out, but something else that had come out around the same time where the audio quality was like way higher. And he now is like, oh man, the audio in this sounds, in Final Fantasy VII, sounds kind of shitty by comparison. And he's kind of like, goes back and forth between like, it kind of had to be done because we really didn't want the loading times to be too extreme.
Is he talking about like the sound effects with that? Because Final Fantasy VII, I remember having like some pretty shitty like...
I think just all of it. It's really low quality. Yeah. And there was something else that came out at the same time that did it to a higher quality. And sure, the loading times were better. And he was kind of a bit like, once you're in it, it does sound a lot better.
Mm.
It's a bit of a shame, but like kind of kicking himself a little bit. Like after it came out, after the fact.
Well, and that happened a lot, that sort of adjustment period of people trying to figure out how to work these new consoles, which was another big thing between the differences between the Saturn and the PlayStation. Because even like people saw, there was like a tech demo with like a walking T-Rex that Sony put out showing the PlayStation.
Yeah.
That was a big thing where people were like, what the fuck? I'm terrified. This train's coming right towards me. Because they were watching it on a platform and they, unfortunately fell off. Anyway.
But Sony kind of went hard in picking up people.
So
because they kind of knew that they needed...
Oh, yes.
They made a big play to get Square. They made a big play to get a bunch of other companies. And then you compare that to Sega, who... You know, again, Mario 64 was like a system seller. They have this asset of this character that everyone knows, so they really work hard to work out how that's going to look in 3D. And then you look at what a Sega do with Sonic on the Saturn. They just put out all these kind of weird quasi 3D. They just seem to not know what to do with him. They've got this asset that potentially could have sold systems, but they just didn't know how to use it.
They never figured out how to do Sonic in 3D during that time. And then when they did put out 3D Sonic games, they still didn't know what the fuck
to do. Exactly.
But so, there was the difference sort of how people were looking at it. People like inside of who were thinking about it anyway, like people who were already paying attention to video games, saw the PlayStation and were like, oh, this is the most powerful one of these 3D consoles so far, and it's actually doing what a 3D thing should. But then the other thing was that developing for the Saturn was very, very difficult.
Right.
So it had like a weird structure where it had these different processes that weren't normal, and you had to be very across how to program for it to make anything decent for it, whereas the PlayStation was easier to program for, which is very, very similar to like the early days of the 360 and the PS3, where Sega is Sony then. They're coming into it arrogant. They're like, we'll be fine. People, Sega means video games to most people.
I mean, that's the thing. Like going to Japan, there's still buildings across every city with giant Sega branding, the huge arcades. Yeah. They are still successful there, but that is how it felt across the world. The Mega Drive / Genesis was very successful.
Yeah.
It did, like we talked about how there are not a lot of franchises that sort of carried across through history from those platforms, but you know, they had big games, they were successful. Sonic was still huge.
Yep.
Yeah.
They were a big name and they already had the marketing budget to do it. And so in Japan, they were a lot more successful with the Saturn than they were in the West. But a big problem for the Saturn in the West was that Nintendo of America, who I think were sort of in control of some European parts of it as well.
You mean Sega of America?
What did I say?
Nintendo.
Yeah, I meant Nintendo. They were doing Sega. That's why Sega failed.
That's a very confusing marketing strategy.
So anyway, Microsoft of America were working like fucked Sega over, Sega of America did, by releasing the Saturn. So when they put it out, it was like it was the 11th of May 1995 in North America, which was during E3 of that year.
Right.
And so there's this big thing of like, when did the PlayStation
that
come out?
That is a crazy time to release.
It's
something.
Fucking stupid, especially like when
in the middle of E3,
when a lot of your retailers don't realize you're doing this.
Mm.
So they clearly made that decision very, very quickly.
Yeah, they're like, oh, let's take advantage of the groundswell of interest in video games. Yeah. Let's do a big surprise.
We'll get
launch.
Out there fucking first. Yeah. The PlayStation's coming for us, so we want to be in homes before the PlayStation launches, which doesn't happen until the 9th of September 95 in North America.
So a few months gap.
They do have a lead,
yep,
which is cool, but then they don't have many games for it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite expensive, I believe, at the time. They put it out in this weird staggered launch where they're like, it's out now, but then they haven't even shipped it to a lot of different retailers and stuff.
Right.
And this is 95, so obviously you need to go to a shop to be able to buy an object. And they
this
don't
is
have
important information to relay to our teenage listeners.
Noxonomics.
You don't have your eBays. You don't have your fucking wish.coms.
Yes.
Where you buy most of your products from.
Sure. Yeah.
But so they tell people it's out. Then no one can get it
because
it's not really that out. It's not distributed.
I remember going to shops like to get a book or something, and you go to a bookshop in like the 90s, and it's like, oh, we don't have that book. We'll put it on order. It'll be here in a month.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, maybe I don't want that book. Even like that kind of stuff does disrupt that process.
The concept of a release date is something that has only taken hold in my mind within the last 15 years or because
you can get it immediately on that day.
And it was like, we'll put it out in March, but when your shop's gonna get it, who fucking knows? So the thing that sat, so Sega's already like kind of launching weird, and then for the remainder of this generation or the existence of the Saturn, the West doesn't get a lot of the good games that come out in Japan. They don't bother translating them or localizing them or anything like that. And there are good Saturn games that we just never fucking saw.
Yeah.
And it dies this very rapid death from how big and popular the PlayStation then becomes.
Well, we talked on the last episode about, our personal memories with the Super Nintendo and the Mega Drive. You know, I traded my Nintendo in for a Mega Drive.
Yes.
I remember the PlayStation kind of factoring in to me around this time. I didn't have one, but I was very aware of it. Like, okay, this is kind of this interesting looking new thing. And then, you know, jumping ahead a bit, but then the Dreamcast. I don't remember the Saturn factoring in to my life at all. I barely remember being aware of it. Again, this is one of those things that I don't remember ever seeing in a shop in this country. Where if you told me that it just never released here, I would just believe you because I never saw one in the flesh.
There was nothing about it that fit with the time that it came out. In retrospect, you can go back to it and be like, oh, there's some cool stuff on here and what a weird little moment in time this thing exists within. But it was focusing on arcade-style games. It was very powerful for 2D stuff, but kind of sucked for 3D. Two trends which were very much going away by the time it had come out.
Yeah.
People didn't give a shit about arcade-style games, really, at that time. It was all moving into RPGs and longer, you know, form things, shooters and adventure-y kind of games, you know, the type of game that started existing in the late fucking 90s.
Mm.
Not arcade-style games. Mm. Yeah. Platformers were big, shit like that. And then, yeah, the 3D stuff. So the Sega Saturn didn't have the games if you were paying attention. And then if you weren't paying attention, you didn't fucking know about it because Sony comes out with this really fucking good marketing strategy for the PlayStation, which is to make it the very first cool video game console.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is maybe
legitimately
the first marketing campaign I remember experiencing.
Yeah, right.
And caring about and grabbing me because it really did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just watched that T-Rex 3D demo, by the way. That's taken me back to a very, very young and delighted place.
The fucking PS1 graphics are my favorite of anything. The weird, warbly, fucking shitty looking textures that are flopping around all over the place and changing shape.
Yeah.
Feels like being in this weird fucking dream.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Siphon filter. Fuck off.
But so the marketing campaign, you're right. They aimed it at teens to young adults, basically.
They shipped a bunch out to like nightclubs and stuff. And they just have them set up there with like Wipeout on them and be like, hey, you hear that music? That's in this game, and this game's for people who take drugs. So
Were there celebrity tie-ins and stuff?
Who would have been around that time? Corey someone. There were a bunch of Coreys.
Yeah. Anna Kournikova would have had one.
His young Conan O'Brien on the PlayStation.
There's a great story in this book about Square, like when Sony's really courting them. They say, okay, if we're going to put this on your console, you've got to sell 3 million of them for it to be worth our while.
Of the consoles.
We need you to have a base of 3 million PlayStations for it to be worth us because they're spending big on making this game.
Yeah.
And they also... Like, Sony gives them this incredible deal where they give them, like, a six-title deal. They still retain, like, a lot of the takings from it, even though Sony are essentially doing, like, a lot of the work of, like, the marketing and the releasing of it and publishing it.
Yeah.
Like, Square still keeps an amount of money that's, like, basically parallel to if they had have just done it themselves. Like, Sony just kind of bend over and are just like, this is what we got to do. We're the new guys. This developer has like huge clout. Mm. Yeah, we want this game on our system. You know, this is a long-term thing. Getting these guys in with us is going to pay off big time in the future. So let's just give them what they want.
It's a strategy that Sony still used during the whole PS4 generation as well. When they were sort of on the back foot after the PS3, which ended up selling better than the 360, I think, globally at some point. It like changed.
Right.
But the 360 blew it out of the water for a while towards the start.
Mm.
And Sony got scared from that and did it again with PS4. And then Microsoft now has been buying up studios and trying to make these deals the same way as Sony was back then.
But that 3 million like console sale mark is very conservative. The PS1 or the PlayStation ended up selling 102 million units in total.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I remember it being called the PSX at the time.
It was indeed, yes, because they had the buttons. That was all of this was I new. So. All of this aesthetic stuff was, was brand new.
The two shoulder buttons was the L2 and R2. They did the first two-stick dual analog controller.
Yep.
The vibration inside of the controller was their thing. Like the 64 did analog and it did the fucking rumble pack and all that shit, but they streamlined all of that a lot more. Didn't really use, but anyway, the what were we fucking talking about? Oh yeah, the number of ones they sold. Oh, it was called the PSX. The PSX was like the code name for it beforehand. It just stayed as a branding. Then the PS1 was like that little tiny
smooth one, right?
Yeah,
which had a screen you could attach to it.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's probably worth pointing out because I'm sure a lot of people already know this, but we have kind of been pushing these episodes to maybe people who aren't as familiar with video games. So maybe there are some new people listening to this. That the really interesting thing about the PlayStation is that it started as a partnership between Sony and Nintendo.
Yes.
It's going to be basically a souped up Super Nintendo using CDs. Nintendo basically kind of and then end up getting cold feet and bailing on it. Mm. And Sony get very fucked off by this and then just go ahead and make it themselves.
They bail on it in some kind of a shitty way.
Yeah.
I don't know if like the full details of what happened came to light ever.
Which is a similar thing with Square. Like in this book, there's a little editor's note basically saying that the company line at some point with Square has clearly been to say that it just suited them to use to go with the PlayStation because of the storage, the amount of storage they could have.
Because at this point, Square had pretty much exclusively been making games for Nintendo machines.
Yeah, they were really in deep with them, so it was a big deal for them to leave. But there's sort of conjecture from around the time and that they were, it was that definitely the storage being part of the reason, but that they were getting the shits with Nintendo not really communicating with them as well, and that there was like a bit more of a, that it wasn't purely a storage thing, that it was, and they kind of ended up being pretty iced by Nintendo off the back of that for a very, very long time. They couldn't really get, there's someone in there tells a story about how they couldn't get them to return their calls. Like they just like completely didn't talk to them. So it was like a pretty icy falling out, even though the company, like, it's funny because like the interviews in the book, the company line now, present day, is to clearly just like, well, you know, not talk negatively about them, like just go, you know, we just did some tests and it just came down to a storage thing. That was the only way to do it, was on the CDs.
It's weird how that story, that thing of like the front runner in the industry becoming arrogant and losing next time around a lot of what they had, like that happened with Nintendo now, moving from the Super Nintendo to the 64. It happened from Sony from the PS2 to the PS3. It happened with Microsoft from the 360 to the Xbox One.
It happens with Nintendo from the Wii to the Wii U.
Yeah.
It happens at least once every generation, sometimes twice.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
If your last console was a success, your next one is probably going to be a pile of shit.
The PS1 and the PS2, they managed to like keep it up for.
That's true. I think because Sega are in there and they die during that. So one of them has to literally
kill off. That's how big Sony was. And we'll talk about... Oh, but I guess the Dreamcast comes out now, so we'll talk about it later.
But
we'll talk about it now.
In terms of Saturn, because there's probably not going to be much more to say about it, except for whether or not we played one. We actually experienced a Sega Saturn.
I don't think I've ever played one.
I did.
Is that the one that you won in a contest, Knox?
I won one at a Civic Video when I was a child.
Incredible. Yes.
But then sold that and got a PlayStation with the money from that, like at exactly the right time.
Boss move.
The thing was discontinued.
You're like a house flipper or something.
Yeah, yeah. And then I bought one back up when they were like $50 at a reject shop.
Picturing this as like a public event where like they bring Knox up on stage, like, what's the first thing you're going to do on your Sega Saturn, young man? I'm going to sell it to get a PlayStation.
I kept it for like, I had it for maybe a month or something and like hired a couple games from that Civic Video. Maybe I got free fucking hires because I won.
Right.
The thing. Oh, them seeing you come in. Here he is. Wanting bloody Nights into Dreams, are you? Bloody Panzer Dragoon, eh?
Yes.
One Crash Bandicoot. What the fuck?
That's great.
Yeah.
If you didn't want to admit to the video store that you'd gotten rid of it.
But so it just didn't have many fucking good games at all. It felt old. It really did seem like it wasn't part of this new wave of stuff.
Nights was on it, wasn't it?
So,
I remember being interested in that because that was like, oh, it's the Sonic creators like new thing. But then it was just basically, it was too, is kind of like 3D-ish looking graphics, but it still
3D.
Is 2D.
And they put out this weird analog controller for it because you move around it through. But it was, then it ended up being like a 2D flying thing where you're just collecting little gems and it fucking wasn't very good.
Yeah.
I don't think. And there are people who like it, but it's a very arcadey, hey, replay this and beat your high score style game, which I think a lot of people were sort of sick of by then.
Yeah.
Because it did go away for a lot of this generation. Some of the other games that came out on the Saturn, there were ports of like Resident Evil and Symphony of the Night and stuff like that. The Virtua Fighter games were big.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, though, you're talking about an arcade fighting game that is being ported over, like not necessarily the hottest thing in the world. Tekken and shit did well, though. Like fighting games were still big at this time.
Mm. Yes.
Sonic R is a terrible...
Racing? Yeah.
No.
Oh.
Sonic says the R word. It's... it's, yeah, it's like,
I mean, I know that Sega were like the pioneers of the 90s attitude in the right. early half, but they really took it one step too far.
Yes. In retrospect, Sonic Blackface is no good. Jimmy Fallon was in that one.
Talk about doing what Nintendo don't.
So Sonic R was like this terrible fucking racing game where you're like running on your feet as Sonic
from
behind
right.
the back, but it like controlled like shit. I've played a lot of these like after the fact.
Right.
Because it was relatively easy to mod a Saturn and play fucking pirated games.
I think I mentioned last week that I had a friend who was a Sega guy.
Yeah.
His family, they had like a Master System and a Mega Drive and all that stuff. And they stuck with Sega.
Yeah.
And they got a Saturn and I don't think they ever recovered.
Finally, the Dreamcast is coming out. Sega's back.
Yeah. But like I played, I think, Virtua Cop, and I reckon I played some racing games. But again, these are arcade games.
Virtua Cop was great.
Yeah,
I really liked it. We had the little gun. I fucking got one from somewhere. It was cool.
What's happened to the light gun game, by the way?
I was thinking this the other day.
Because now you could just do it so easily with the most control, you know, most control schemes have that like gyro kind of thing.
The problem is, so the way that those light guns worked was it relied on it being a CRT TV. Because the way the refresh rate on those worked, it would draw line by line and it would flash in one of the frames like a white square. Oh, this is the way like the NES one did it, but it was the same for a lot of them.
Right.
It would flash.
It was a literal physical interaction between what was behind the CRT screen and what was coming out of the gun, right?
It kind of, the gun was just a sensor.
Mm.
And the TV would show up a little frame of where it thought the enemies were, and it would detect. I'm not a fucking scientist. I work at Mr. Goop's chocolate fucking factory. I can't do this sort of technology.
Is that Augustus Gloop? Augustus Goop. Yeah. He survives and he opens his own chocolate factory.
He got sucked into the main mind of the factory, and he is the factory. Okay. That's where I work.
Dr.
Fuck Knuckles jelly lizard shop.
Hometown laboratory.
Yeah. So, but the light gun games, were great during this era.
Yeah, I was seeing the other day. I'd love a Time Crisis or
Point Blank. Was a ripper. That was on the PlayStation. Maybe
both of those had ports on the PlayStation. So again, even though Virtua Cop is cool, the Saturn still is behind in this genre.
Did Time Crisis have the, I know it had in the arcade, but I can't remember if it came with this at home. The pedal to move out from cover.
Yes.
I think some of the guns had pedals and some just had a button on the side. Sega Rally was like a good rally game. Panzer Dragoon is like a very fun rail shooter thing. They made a RPG of it, Panzer Dragoon Saga, which I've never played. So there were some games that are like good. Tomb Raider fucking came out on it.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of things that are fun on it, but they're few and far between in the West, at the very least, and they're not the type of game that is in vogue at the moment. So you can really see, just based on the library of games alone, what caused the Saturn to die.
Because Sega have some cool properties around this time. So if you're a Mega Drive head and you're upgrading to the Saturn, you know, you're probably thinking like, oh, cool, there'll be cool Sonic games. There'll be like a cool like Altered Beast, like all these different properties that you probably were really excited for them to like transition into 3D or have a bit more graphical power behind.
Yeah.
And they just do nothing with it, with any of them.
Or like Shining Force, if you're into the Shining Force games.
Sure.
Which I'm willing to bet virtually no one is. there's just not the library there. And then a lot of the good ones are also on the PlayStation and are better versions on the PlayStation.
Well, so that's the thing, right? In the marketplace at this time, there's no point of difference for Sega anymore. They used to be different to Nintendo, significantly, stylistically.
And they were the cool one.
They were the cool one, exactly.
Nintendo was kind of dorky, and Sega was like the, we got a badass hedgehog. He maybe swears if he could talk.
Well, guess
what?
He says
the R word. Now- it's not swearing now, though. It's 1993. Who gives a shit?
It's 1995, and now we're into badass bandicoots.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Sony just takes all of Sega's cachet and one-ups them technologically.
Yeah.
Wipeout especially is like, at least in European markets, maybe in America as well, maybe in Japan, but my experience is predominantly the Australian experience.
Okay, the PAL.
Yeah, the PAL region.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the PAL and NTSC bullshit fucking days, man.
You know,
PAL's worse.
Yeah, anytime I
is
listen
it really?
To, yes. Yeah, anytime
it runs
I listen
at a
to
lower
Kanan
frame
Reince,
rate. It's got a worse resolution, even I believe, or maybe the resolution is slightly higher.
I thought we were better.
No. PAL is in no way better.
Fuck. Every time I listen to the Kanan Reince podcast and they talk about a game from their it's a British podcast. They talk about a game from around this era. There's always 10 minutes of fucking limey whinging about how dodgy the PAL version was, and it does make me thankful that I was young enough at the time where I didn't really I didn't know of any difference. I was just like, this is just how things look like.
PAL was at 50 hertz, so you'd have maximum frame rate of 50.
But
and usually
NTSC
it'd be
60?
lower, and NTSC is 60,
right?
And I think PAL's resolution was like 576i or some bullshit fucking number,
right,
that made sense when it TV was made of like magnet shooting lasers.
Yes.
But the 480p or I or something was the NTSC. Anyway, games ran smoother in NTSC versions generally.
Right.
Remember having getting a VCR that could play NTSC tapes, but then needing a compatible TV.
Oh, yeah. It went for so long. Remember fucking switching regions on DVD players?
Yeah.
Man, good thing we're a global community now.
Mm.
I love having everywhere in the world always accessible to me at all times on Twitter and shit. It makes me feel so not anxious. So the PS1 though had a million fucking games.
Yes.
Cool games at this time as well.
Yep.
For whatever it, like Tekken was the fighter there, and there was like fucking Battle Arena Toshinden.
Oh yeah.
Was a big early one. And they were cooler than Virtua Fighter. People saw them as more of the moment. They weren't the 2D Street Fighter shit anymore that was also coming out of the Saturn. They had things like Wipeout, that their whole thing was this aesthetic, this very 90s clubby lasers.
Mm. Put your big fluffy pants on,
yeah.
Chuck the pacifier around your neck,
yeah. Exactly.
And fire up the PSX.
Yeah. It's very ecstasy
it is.
Era,
yeah.
And they make games that plug into that.
Again, like aesthetically, that's a very, very strong one. And it's like if you're not 20... If you are 14, you still feel cool and older playing that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to a Mario Kart, which is still a great game and good for kids and everyone because they were great.
Yeah.
Where's Sega coming in? They got nothing.
Sega's got nothing like that.
Nothing distinct about Sega anymore.
So they fuck off. They're done by 1998. The Saturn is dead.
Yep.
And they start working on the next thing. But as the PlayStation sort of having this big rise, Nintendo... still putting shit out on the Super Nintendo, which is old now, but they're like, the next one's coming, everyone. Don't worry. Yeah. Nintendo's coming out with they call it the Ultra 64 at the time. Everyone's talking about the Ultra 64.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 64-bit console, so it's two PlayStations.
Yeah.
Mm. The PlayStation's only 32-bit.
Yeah.
So we're going to... You want to strap two PlayStations together? Don't bother. The Ultra 64 is coming out.
I remember these numbers meaning everything at the time. Like even around this time,
they
like
were so
hypothesizing
huge.
With my friend, like, imagine what it's gonna be like when they get to a 256. What it's gonna look like.
I think we're up to technically like 2048 bit if it doubles every time.
Keep it going. It's so disappointing that they don't have the number on the end of like the Switch 3000 or whatever would be so much better.
Like the PS2 was 128 bit.
Right.
I guess.
128 and then 256.
Would be like the 360.
Yeah.
I suppose. Sure. And then 512-bit would be the current ones. And so we're going into 1024-bit.
Okay.
Hell
unless
yeah.
there was another
I feel like
two
there was
bits
a jump.
Come out in the generation. Like maybe the original Xbox is technically 256-bit.
I feel like it might have more than doubled in a few of the generations.
I don't think it means fucking
doubling.
Jack shit anymore. I don't even know what it meant back then. I have no idea what these bits were about at all.
No, I can't even hazard a guess.
But Nintendo thought they were so fucking important that they literally strapped it onto the end of the name of their company and they're like, that's what we're calling the console.
Mm.
Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
I guess they created that, right? Like, if they hadn't made a big deal about that, it was only in retrospect that I remember being aware of, like, oh, so the Super Nintendo was 16.
People were talking about it with the 3DO and shit, saying, like, these are technically 32-bit.
I feel like the graduation from 8-bit to 16-bit was also talked about. I do remember that.
Okay.
Never having owned a 16-bit console.
Right.
Is I do
this generation that. For whatever reason people were like, we're jumping, I guess, because 3D was coming along.
Yes,
there was stuff that you wanted to have some way of measuring the jumps that were happening here, because the jump from the Super Nintendo to the Nintendo 64 or that, you know, generation is huge.
Yeah.
3D at the time was fucking crazy. Yeah. I still remember, and I know you do, I think we've both told these stories of the first time we played Mario 64.
Mm.
But so the Nintendo 64 comes along in 95 in Japan, I think. End of 95?
97.
97 here.
Start of 97 here.
So maybe 96 in Japan.
End of 96. September 96, maybe?
You've got it.
Oh!
September 29th, 96 in North America. So June 96 in Japan.
But right. But in terms of the bits, right. I do remember that really working as a strategy on me, at least. I do remember a lot of conversation of like, oh, so the PlayStation's 32 and then Nintendo have a 64-bit one.
Yeah. Right.
Like, wow, they're just not even going to bother fucking around with 32. They're just leapfrogging straight over.
Yeah.
And then because they're using cartridges,
yeah,
the difference and in quality is like, just to look at a screenshot, basically the same. And in many ways... less or so, because you can't store the same kind of things.
There's certain effects, like graphical effects, it can't do. Yeah. I think also because Nintendo are a little bit more restricted in terms of development, right? Like, you can't just open it up like a PlayStation and be like, all right, fuck around with all of this tech. They're a bit more controlled.
Most Nintendo 64 games, like the way that the hardware did it, put like this blur on it, like this anti-aliasing effect.
Mm.
That's why they look so blurry.
Well,
in
this Final Fantasy book, they talk about, one of the developers talks about eventually seeing Ocarina of Time and being very impressed with it and sort of thinking like, oh right, okay, well I guess we kind of could have done, you know, they've done this,
right?
Like, we probably could have done Final Fantasy 7 on it, which they fit, but they were just like, well, we weren't tapped into, like, that's their developers using their hardware, so they were tapped into it in a way which we didn't have access to, so we just didn't know that that was an option.
And it's like, for the most part, Nintendo and Rare who are able to do that with this machine. And like, it has bigger areas than the PlayStation because there's like more RAM on it and you've got that fucking little expansion thing.
Mm.
But they're pretty similar looking.
Yeah.
There's not a huge amount of... There's vibe of their graphics are very different because of the individual ways that those things process those graphics. You have like, I remember looking this up at some point, and I'm going to butcher it if I try to explain the technical stuff, but let's give it a go.
Right.
I've got my big meat cleaver. All right, love, what you need.
5 pounds of fucking up this description, please.
Oh, we've only got terribly fucking up this description in today. Without ado,
right.
A little bit of fat on it.
Yeah.
The PlayStation had issues with its Z buffer, which is what is telling the computer where in depth each thing is occurring.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why the graphics look all wobbly, because the whole time it's like, I think it's fucking here,
sure,
but I don't know. Right. It might be over here. Should I jump it over there immediately? Yeah, let's do it.
Right.
And so that's why they looked all wobbly. The Nintendo 64 didn't have that, but also had this like blur and anti-aliasing stuff that made it look all kind of muddy and blurry and smudgy.
Right. So weirdly, it was like actually more precise in where things were. They just looked worse.
They looked kind of fuzzier and the PlayStation kind of looked crisper and then could do those pre-rendered 3D backgrounds a lot more easily because it had more space. The 64 was like technically capable of doing it. Resident Evil 2 came out on it and has those pre-rendered backgrounds.
Right.
Because the people who ported that were very good at compression stuff and were able to fit it into a cartridge.
Right.
So yeah, there's a lot of technical differences between the 64 and the PlayStation that lead to some pretty different games coming out on the both. Like Gran Turismo on the PlayStation is this massive game with all this content.
Yeah.
There's heaps of music on it.
Realism was a real focus of a lot of those PlayStation games as well.
Yeah, it was like
an early...
And take
the game disc out and chuck an audio CD in there and then being able to listen to that music in the game.
Weirdly, the PlayStation is still considered a very, very good CD player by like audiophiles.
Right.
The ones that have like the actual like composite outputs on the back.
Oh, right.
Those are apparently some of the best CD players that have ever been made.
Interesting.
I still have my original PlayStation. I might have to test it out.
With the little things on the back?
I think so, yeah.
I think they fetch a pretty penny these days.
Hello.
I don't know what the difference is personally between different CD players. I thought the whole point of them is that they're digital and it doesn't exist. Whatever. Apparently they're crisper in some way.
Yeah, right.
As someone who owned a Nintendo 64 at the time and not a PlayStation, the big thing I remember being very jealous of was the cutscenes. Like seeing cutscenes on TV in demo units and just like you the 64 would do these kind of like cheated, you know, Banjo-Kazooie opens with that little movie, but that's just using...
It's all in-game.
That's all in-game engine kind of that they've sort of cheated. Like seeing the actual like...
Full motion video
stuff just made it look light years ahead of its time. But then I remember the big thing from the Nintendo camp, them being very cocky about like, none of our games have loading times. That's the thing that we've sacrificed. Sure, you can't have FMV, but you put the cartridge in, you're not waiting for the fucking game to load. And
not
that
much.
That being a big thing of just like...
It's crazy how technically different they were, because then games would get ported onto both and be quite different on both, or, you know, be a struggle to make and everything. So that those differences as well led... So the other big difference with the 64 too, when that came out, was that it had the analog stick.
Yes.
In the controller. People make fun of that controller for having three prongs. I mean, like, I don't have three hands. Like, cunt, you only need two.
Yeah, you move your hand.
They've made it specific. What's wrong with it anyway?
It was cool. It was a point of difference. Like, everything about it, it's like got this weird name, you know, where you're putting the number of bits in the title of it. The controller is kind of this bizarre looking thing.
It looked fucking futuristic at the time, though. Yeah. Right. It looked so cool at the time, and it had all the different colors for them. Mm-hmm. They looked more fun. And then that stick was really cool, because 3D games on the PlayStation up until that point, they still weren't really figuring out how to make them control well.
No, well, you weren't actually controlling in 3D. It was still just forwards, backwards, left, and right.
Right.
Yeah.
So the 64 coming out of the gate with Mario 64 on it as well, being like, not only have we put this stick on here, but here's exactly how to use it, because we've made a game that has perfect 3D movement.
Right. Yeah.
It was an exciting time to be into games, as all this stuff is coming out, and there's this huge leap from these sprite graphics into like feeling like you were like a little kid, but on the forefront of like this technology, stuff looking like the future.
And because they had those technical differences, there were different genres of game that were big on both.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I was going to mention that, whether because there are distinct aesthetics, like really distinct, and it's kind of across the board. Nintendo, obviously, it's because they're the main developer for their own consoles, almost, you know, on every console they've ever released. But Sony somehow managed to maybe encourage, maybe there's a style guide, there's some sort of discussion that's had with each of the developers, like, these are meant to look kind of realistic and cool.
There's also just a fuckload of games on it.
Yes.
It has such an enormous library of stuff that there's a bunch of bullshit on there that no one remembers, like Barbie's fucking horse, whatever.
Yeah, Barbie's Dream Palace horse town.
Very quick.
PlayStation is like the console of my life. It's the one that I really got into gaming with. I got a subscription to PlayStation Magazine. I got every demo disc on those magazines, which means I sampled 500 PlayStation games.
Right, those demo discs were so fucking cool.
Oh, so cool.
Playing like, I'd never play fucking Roll Cage. Yes. When am I ever going to buy G-Police? But here I am.
I get to try out Carmageddon.
Yeah.
That's another big
Twisted
one I was
Metal
jealous
4,
of.
Twisted Metal
4,
eh?
Yes.
That's another big one from the time I was jealous of, the demo discs.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking cool, yeah.
Yeah.
The price of producing a cartridge was so high.
Yeah. I always wished that they, even though it was like obvious why they didn't, but I'm like, just wish some magazine would have a crack. Chuck us a demo cartridge. Who cares if it means that the magazine costs $70?
I remember people talking about, like, because this was the time when you could, towards the end of the 64's lifespan, where you could bring like a digital camera memory card into a chemist's and print out photos there from that. Thing like, why don't they have a thing where you can jam a cartridge in there, it'll upload that month's demos, and then you take the cartridge out and take it home? Because they gave me a fucking Mew in a shopping center a Pokemon event.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they could do this for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But not relevant anymore. But they were very, very different. Platformers and like first person shooters were big on the 64.
Yep.
And I think I talked about this last, I missed that era of that type of control of first-person shooter. It was really cool. GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
Yeah,
the also-rans, like Turok and fucking whatever, on the 64 was so fucking cool.
Perfect Dark, 20 years old this week. I think I saw a few things pop up of that, yeah.
Happy birthday.
Mm.
It's not a person. It was so embarrassing that I just wished happy birthday to a video game. Next time I'm washing my hands, I'm going to think back to that one. Because I'm singing a happy birthday song because of coronavirus.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, mate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then the PlayStation, yeah, had this enormous library with a whole bunch of different things. There were all these racing and all these, every different type of game that you could wish for was
completely
on that thing.
Yeah.
And it was fucking cool. It didn't have the big, big hitters like the 64 did, I don't think.
No, I was going to say before, the sort of two comparison games for those two platforms, one is probably Mario 64
yeah.
for the Nintendo. And then I think Final Fantasy VII is probably the closest analog for PlayStation.
At the time, I remember people comparing Final Fantasy VII to Ocarina of Time. And right. those games were like sort of in direct combat in the magazines and stuff, with people going like, Final Fantasy VII is the better JRPG, because they were calling Zelda an RPG at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was no RPG equivalent like that on the 64 at all.
But there's also not a 3D platformer equivalent for PlayStation, really?
No, because you got your Crash Bandicoots and your Spyros and all of that sort of thing that come along in the PlayStation.
And they're good. They're good games. And the remastered ones that have come out recently, people might have played and will know, like, oh yeah, these hold up as good platformers, but they're not quite on the same level as Mario.
Mario 64 and Banjo-Kazooie and whole bunch of other ones.
That's true. There's more than just one.
Right. Yeah. Everything that Rare and Nintendo put out during the 64, pretty much across the board, was a big fucking hit.
Mm. Yep.
And the highs of those were generally higher peaks than the PlayStation seemed to manage, is my memory of it at the time. There weren't as many, like, fucking hell, this game's amazing games on the PlayStation to me at the time.
Yeah, we talked about this a bit when the PS Classic was announced with the library of games that was on it, where there just weren't those like massive exclusives.
Stuff like Metal Gear Solid, I remember, but then that came out on the PC as well.
Yeah.
There were a whole bunch of games like that where they were huge and the PlayStation was like the primary platform for them.
I think that's the issue with my memories of this time is like I had a PlayStation, so Tekken maybe exclusive? Oh, it was an arcade game.
Yeah. Mm. And then they all sort of came out on other stuff in the future as well. So looking back on it, it's hard to sort of put yourself back in that place.
Well, that's the issue with using the PlayStation Classic as a reference point. You're right. There's not a bunch of exclusive franchises for it because the ones that were on the PlayStation went on to become so hugely successful that they went multi-platform. But Metal Gear Solid was a huge one. And again, it sort of fits into that aesthetic, that PlayStation aesthetic of like serious, cool, semi-realistic, long role-playing game sort of games.
Yeah. It is funny in retrospect to look at Metal Gear Solid and go, serious and cool.
I know, but it was like watching a cool James Bond movie.
It was like the most cinematic game that had been made up until that point.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I guess for the demographic that we were in at the time as well, the 64, like stuff like Mario and Banjo-Kazooie and whatever was more appealing because we weren't quite old enough, or I wasn't at least, to be in that take some ecstasy and play the PlayStation generation.
Mm.
Yeah, and also, you know, being a kid at the time too, like it was a big deal for your parents to get you a console for the house. Mm. And there really was this thing of like, you picked early on, and it was like, well, you know, I liked the Super Nintendo, I traded it in for the Mega Drive and I kind of regretted it. All right, I'm going to go with the 64. And then even seeing stuff that looked cool on the PlayStation, it just kind of wasn't an option where, like, you know, now you get a bit older and you've got maybe more disposable income, you can go, you know what, I'd have a good time with an Xbox. I'm just going to buy an Xbox. There's one on sale on Amazon. Fuck it, I'm just going to buy one now. You really did have to, like, you were in a camp, like you were picked, and for better or worse, you just had to like stick it out. And you know, it's funny to like then get on and read about, you know, how the 64 was selling versus the PlayStation, because like at the time, it just seemed like heaps of great games are coming out on this thing that I'm loving playing. You know, you're not so much aware of like the actual sales figures or whatever. It's just like reading in magazines. Oh, wow, the official Nintendo magazine has given this Nintendo-published game a 10 out of 10. They've done it again.
Perfect Dark got 101%.
That's right.
It's better than perfect. And that's true. Yeah. That's on print.
Yeah. They can't print that if it's not true.
I don't know what the term lamestream media means yet. I'll believe this. There's no YouTube essays fucking tearing down.
I guess I could get Hyper Magazine if I want a more balanced opinion, but I don't have the money to spend on 2/3 worth of, you know, reviews and previews of games for consoles that I don't own.
And where's the demo disc? It's not on there.
Exactly.
Well, I think you didn't give a shit about it, but
The reason we had a PlayStation was because I wasn't a ecstasy taking, 18-year-old, but my dad was the person with the purchasing power in the family, and he was the one who was going to be like, yeah, it's worth spending money on a video games console.
We're skipping our ecstasy this month, honey. We're buying the kids a PlayStation. Mm.
But he was also a gamer, and he was never going to buy a Nintendo 64. He, I think, like a lot of people, had the attitude that they were for kids, and he saw the PlayStation as the PlayStation 2 and 3 were later advertised as being a piece of technology for the home theater system. A
multimedia entertainment center.
Totally. Yeah. And he would have been probably actually tapped into whether or not they were a good CD player. He loves music.
At the time, CD players were still expensive. It was a selling point. DVD players for the PS2, huge. Blu-ray for PS3, massive. Yeah. PS4 came out. So there's no reason for someone over a certain age to be more into the 64. Mm. It had GoldenEye and it had whatever. It had the 4 controller ports, which was cool. Mm. But in terms of just like you're going to a shop and picking one up, yeah, the PlayStation fucking nailed it during this whole generation.
Yeah.
Also during this generation, I guess, is a Game Boy Color that comes out.
Yeah, it's a Game Boy, but it's color.
Whoa. It comes out right around the time Pokemon is like this enormous fucking thing.
Yes.
Everyone's got their little Game Boy Pockets by this point. But then Pokemon smashes the world apart and Game Boys are selling through the roof.
Mm. I remember, the upgrade to Game Boy Color looked incredible.
Yeah, it was cool.
Just being able to have not even that many colors on the screen at once.
And it was like a slight improvement to how graphically powerful it was as well. It wasn't just color, it was like a little bit better.
Right. Oh, yeah, because you could play original Game Boy games on a Game Boy Color, but you couldn't just put a Game Boy Color game into a Game Boy and play it in black and white.
There were some that were both that had like the black cartridge, where if you put in an original Game Boy, it'd work. If you put in a Game Boy Color, it'd have color.
Right.
And then there were ones in like a clear cartridge only Game Boy Color.
I think maybe Wario Land 3 was the first one I remember being like a big, like, this is a Game Boy Color exclusive.
Yeah. The like second Pokemon games, there were those Zelda games that Capcom made that were in those. So there are a few of them.
The first generation of Pokemon games were made for the normal Game Boy, right?
Yes.
And you got a... because I think that's when I got a Game Boy, was the color, but it was for Pokemon. That was the thing that everyone was interested in.
Yeah, I think Red and Blue came out in like 96 in Japan or something, and then like 98 over here.
Right. And so they just got like a slight tint, I feel like. Like they weren't converted to color, but I do feel like there was some sort of... maybe it was that just graphical upgrade.
I think with all of them, you could, similar to what we talked about with the Super Game Boy on the Super Nintendo, you could like assign.
Backgrounds
and sprites would have different colors on the same palette, and you can choose a palette.
Yeah,
and then some games, I think Pokemon would have been one of them, had these sort of pre-programmed custom palettes, that would come out, and so it would upgrade a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't have heaps to say about that. It kept Nintendo fucking going while the Nintendo 64 was doing okay for them. But the Game Boy was enormous and was for the entire late. There was no competitor to it, really.
Yeah,
there was like the Neo Geo Pocket Color.
Mm.
Remember that? No?
Nope.
Exactly. The Neo Geo is something we haven't talked about, but that was a fucking massively expensive console with hugely expensive games.
Yeah,
it was
an
arcade machine, basically, for your house. No one owned it. It was only for like fucking Richie Rich.
So the Atari Lynx came and went in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, yeah. They were all fucked off by like the mid 90s.
And then,
pretty much.
It is, if you want a handheld console, quote unquote, it was a Game Boy.
Totally.
Yeah.
Which is nuts to think about. It's still kind of the case, though. There's no, there is no longer anything other than the Switch, which is a handheld thing other than phones.
Yeah.
Which is this huge other thing that we'll get to at some point down the track.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, yeah, Nintendo was doing big with the Game Boy. Pokemon was the biggest fucking thing in the world. I had a bunch of Pokemon cards.
Yes.
I think they're still in a box somewhere in some house.
I gave mine away to a family friend, all of them, and I had a lot.
They're worth money still. Yeah. I've always thought about digging them out and fucking packing them up and sending them off to someone.
You should.
Yeah.
Or just have them.
No,
look at them.
I don't
play
them anymore. They're done.
So then I remember getting a copy of Electronic Gaming Monthly. This must have been end of 98, maybe.
Sure.
with new redesigned Sonic on the cover. And it was this whole cover story in advance of the Dreamcast coming out about Sega's big attempt at getting themselves back on track. And redesigning Sonic and giving him green eyes was seen as a big part of this to compete with the coolness of PlayStation or whatever,
what?
I guess.
He had like some folded arms and he looked a bit funky.
Yeah.
He was,
I mean, that was always different. His, thing, his kind of proportions. They took him from being kind of like squat and sort of stretched him out a bit.
He went from early 90s to late 90s attitude. It was a small difference, but there was a difference there.
Okay.
And people in general were talking about like the next generation. By this point,
they kind of tried to make him look like those kind of weird Looney Tunes t-shirts. You know, Bugs Bunny's dressed like a gangster and going, "Suck my dick."
Yeah. Exactly right. Yes. WWF is in its attitude era, and kids want you to tell them to suck your dick. That's what all the early teens are into at the moment. That's so weird that that actually was like a cultural moment with all these children watching South Park and shit going like, "Hey, suck my dick." You're like, "You're 11.
Yeah.
I don't know if I even could." It, like, even if I had to, gun to my head.
It went from eat my shorts to take my shorts off and suck my dick.
Yeah.
I'm no longer wearing shorts.
Yes.
I know. The shorts are out of the picture, man.
I'm wearing satin boxer shorts that say suck my dick on them.
I know what'll show my teacher who's boss, demanding that they commit pedophilia on me. Got him.
Oh, man, everything did get worse, didn't it? It has been a downhill trajectory for years and years. Because now that I'm old enough to start thinking, like,
sucking
fuck, are the kids all right
dicks
at this moment?
Yeah.
I'm just seeing someone fucking turn 18 and it's like, I'm on OnlyFans. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
You're not
even
saying suck my dick anymore. You're just flat out showing it to me.
Yeah.
No, but that's the equivalent of back in the day. That's what our parents must have
thought. Exactly. I'm saying I'm going through that phenomenon now.
Right, right.
Where
right.
I'm thinking, Jesus, the next generation's coming up different to me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so
I never ate an ass until I was...
You're saying subscribe to my OnlyFans is the modern equivalent of the phrase suck my dick.
Yeah.
Close enough.
That's what it's morphed into. Right.
It is generally said as a derisive fuck you on online at least.
That's true. Yeah.
Like a lot of the time it's...
Venmo
the fuck
me
out
$5
of here.
Bucks and shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Man. Oh, that's so fun. I remember being in year four and there was this kid, Evan, who I thought was so fucking cool because he was a badass.
Yeah.
But thinking back to that, how old are you in year four? You're fucking 10?
Yeah.
You're 9 years old? Mm-hmm. And his whole thing was telling teachers, like, look at my asshole, teach. And at the time being like, what the fuck? I remember one of the teachers getting so mad at him that he picked up the chair he was sitting on and took him out of the classroom.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I was like, wow, that kid's dope. And now thinking back, smoked. He was 9 years old and he smoked.
Wow.
That kid had enormous problems.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Hey, suck my dick, teach.
Tiny little Al Capone sitting in the... It's so weird, shitting himself. So anyway, the next gen is getting talked about. That phrase, next gen, and the whole next generation thing.
So yeah, I read this big, this vivid memory of being on a flight somewhere with my family and reading this big article.
You get to the centerfold, it's Sonic naked in a bikini.
There actually was a pull-out poster of this new redesign. It was a big thing of like, this is what Sonic Adventure is and making the leap, and it seemed cool. I was into it. I wanted a Dreamcast.
Because Sega was the first, again.
Sega was the first. The graphics on this thing looked amazing, even better FMV.
People were talking about, they knew that it was going to be the PlayStation 2 at some point. They knew there was going to be, it was called the Star Cube, I believe is what people were calling the GameCube before it came out.
The Dolphin.
Oh, was that the Dolphin?
Wasn't the Dolphin
the Wii?
Oh, maybe
that,
you're
no, that
right.
was the Revolution.
Yeah, no, the Dolphin was the Wii. I don't know if was Dolphin out there.
At some point, they definitely, because there were renders of dolphins.
It was a codename at some point. Yeah.
So, and we're early on at this point, and then there's whispers of an X-box. Or it was like the DirectX box, it was called.
Ah, yes.
Because DirectX was like their PC thing, and we'll talk about PC in a minute. But
it could have been the OpenGL box.
Man, the Vulcan box. There's hype about a next generation at this point, though.
What's the sentiment about Sega at this point? Because I don't really remember anything about Sega.
Huge flop with the Saturn, but still a big name. They're still a console manufacturer.
They make consoles. They have the clout. It looks like they're finally They're going to make the 3D Sonic game that people want. There's that. There's this footage of, you know, him running down the pier with the like whale chasing after him. It's like the pier's being destroyed. It all looks pretty cool. I remember being into it. It had the controller. It had the little open bit in it where you could plug in the, what was
the
it called?
VMU, your virtual memory unit, or visual memory unit, virtual. But it was like a little Tamagotchi looking fucking thing.
Right.
Where it had a D-pad and two buttons on it and a little LCD screen.
Oh, yeah.
You plug
it
into your controller and then it'll show like Sonic's face while you're playing Sonic. And you're like, dude, this looks like shit.
This is distracting.
Yeah.
Well, then you could, there was a thing in this
Sonic.
It beeped
so loudly because it was always out of battery. It would go beep to let you know. It swore as soon as you know.
There was a thing in Sonic Adventure where you could like get little these little
chows,
little and upload it onto the VMU thing, and then it would function kind of like a Tamagotchi.
Right,
Tamagotchis were enormous at this time.
Yeah, so I think all this stuff, like the potential for what you could do. I think that was talked about, like you could put game data onto it, and then you could kind of. There would be ways that you could interact with it away from the game and come up with little plans on it and then put it back into the controller to use it. The potential for it seemed cool. It seemed like an interesting thing.
Yeah, definitely. I just had this memory then because of Tamagotchis. When I was a kid, I had a Tamagotchi.
Mm-hmm.
And at school, they had this thing where they were telling us to write about something we cared about for some reason. It was like a writing exercise, and you had to write about something that affected you emotionally or whatever. Weird fucking thing to make a kid do, but we're telling the teachers to suck our dicks all day. They're probably sick of us.
They're probably like, just explain, please, why you're acting this way.
Yeah. But it was some writing exercise, write about something that meant something to you or something you care about. And I maybe that morning or very recently dropped this Tamagotchi and smashed it. It was broken.
Ooh.
So I wrote out this thing about how that had made me feel.
Oh.
And so I sat down and I penned this paper on how my Tamagotchi dying had made me feel. And I was amping it up a little bit, I think.
Okay.
In the piece of paper. in the little bit of writing here.
In the essay, yeah.
So I remember towards the end of what I'd written, it was my Tamagotchi broke and I felt like crying, so I did. That was the last sentence.
Okay.
Now, this is the late 90s and I'm at a school where people are being carried out of the room on their chairs for telling teachers to suck their dick.
Right.
I don't know if everyone's going to be... But I think I'm just writing this fucking thing. They don't read out my fucking maths homework. No one's going to read this out.
Yeah.
The teacher gets up the front.
Oh, no!
And starts to read. Hasn't pre-read any of these. Doesn't know what the content is.
Ooh.
Just begins reading them.
Oh, my God.
So
Jesus.
I remember the teacher. His name was Rod. I went to a school where he called the teachers by their first name. It was fucked.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't help anybody. It made me worse. The... He read through it and got towards the end, the last sentence being, and I felt like crying, so I did.
Yes.
He hadn't pre-read. He said, my Tamagotchi broke, so I felt like crying, so I did. And then he folded it up. He was like, very good.
Oh,
put it back on my
wow.
table. But everyone had inferred already what I was about to say. So
good on him for trying at least to cover it up.
Yeah, but bad on him for even thinking, hey, kids, write about your trauma and I'll read it out. Maybe it was like some way to dig up dirt on people's family. But anyway, I got bullied for caring about my Tamagotchi for a while after that.
Oh, no.
Poor Adam.
Yeah. A shuttle over the floor just so that people would have to clean up for me. Living like a Tamagotchi. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, the Tamagotchi was big in these VMUs.
Yeah.
And the Dreamcast, it looked cool. I remember hiring one a couple of times.
Right.
Crazy Taxi was a super fun game. But again,
arcade-y.
It's an arcade game.
Yeah. Mm.
And
18-wheeler pro trucker. The Dreamcast looked amazing at the time,
though. It did. It really did.
It was a huge leap, and it was the being first out of the gate made a big impression because you hadn't even really seen screenshots of what PS2 games look like. There were some floating around. It was like renders of like, this is the emotion engine and this is what fucking this Tekken guy is going to look like soon.
Yep.
But you didn't really know what that next generation was going to look like. So the Dreamcast was a big, huge, stunning
and
showpiece
again,
at the time.
They launch with Sonic Adventure.
Yeah.
So people now, there's like precedent of a 3D console launching with a mascot.
Yeah.
And it kind of like.
And the game was well received at the time. It was a terrible game.
Do you
want to
hear a quote
time.
From. This is fantastic. IGN have the definitive Dreamcast launch game guide.
Okay.
An article written in 1999.
Wow.
It came out on the 9th of the 9th, 99 in America.
Yeah.
Oh. They say the bottom line is that Sonic Adventure is a great game, but it is just too far from perfection to be considered a must-have title for the casual gamer.
A lot of people really liked Sonic Adventure at the time, but it is a terrible game now. It controls like shit and it fucking sucks.
I remember hiring it, and I remember being, yeah, that opening sequence, great.
Yeah.
And then getting into it and being like,
saw through it.
Straight out the gate, they just don't quite pull it off. Especially when it's coming out in the shadow of this launch title for the Nintendo 64 that is just like immediately beloved, and everyone goes, this is the blueprint for what a platformer in 3D is. This is it. They've worked it out.
Yeah.
And that then everything copies that format of overworld, levels within that, collect-a-thon, like stuff scattered around the world. Sonic Adventure tries to be this like quite... It's quite linear, isn't it? It's like going from area to area and like multiple characters. Like,
yeah, and it
there's a lot of ambition
like
to it, but they just don't. This is the dawn of all these weird new characters coming into Sonic, where they've got a big cat and a robot. And
right,
it just...
the big cat was named Big the Cat. By the way.
Wow, how did they come up with that?
Yeah, it wasn't very good. But then they do put out some good stuff on the Dreamcast. Jet Set Radio was fucking awesome. I loved that game at the time. Shenmue was a big deal.
Oh yeah,
like it was that type of thing where you're like, they couldn't have made this on the old one.
I was going to say a few like pretty ambitious sounding games.
Yeah,
like maybe some of them were misses, but at least they were going for something very impressive.
It also like it didn't have that many of those type of exclusive things to it though. It did have the benefit of having the best versions of a lot of ports.
Right.
So like Tony Hawk 2 and like Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver.
Yeah, I remember that. But those are games that have been out for a couple of years already. Yes. And if you wanted to play them, you've played them on a PlayStation.
Exactly.
Or a 64.
Having the best fucking version of Rayman 2 or whatever when it's 2 years old doesn't really matter that
much.
It's
not selling consoles.
No.
Yeah. They do still have a lot of these properties and these games on there that even to this day, they frustratingly just don't seem to be interested in doing anything with. Like a new Crazy Taxi that's got a bit more depth to it, incredible. People are always crying out for a new Jet Set Radio or enhanced port, and they just don't do anything with it.
No, a lot of those are because they lost the goodwill with some bad sequels to them, though. Jet Set Radio Future was great, but they made like a Crazy Taxi 3 that wasn't good.
Right.
They did fall off, maybe even as a developer, you know, because what was the last Sega made? This is Sega making this game that you can recall to mind.
Well, of course, Sonic famously, they've never been able to make a good one until they got someone else to make it. The Sonic Mania was really fun.
I think the Yakuza games are a lot of like sort of Sega people, but there's not that many Sega, this is Sega developed games anymore that I can call to mind immediately.
Yeah, I think you're right. They published a bunch of great games. I think, did they publish Persona?
No, that's Atlas.
Oh, yes, you're right. There is something that I must
have
played.
They published like Total War, and they published like Alien Isolation, like weird things. They're kind of like a publisher now.
Yeah,
a lot more than developing anything themselves.
But maybe the Yakuza franchise is the one I'm thinking of.
So the Dreamcast, similar to the Saturn, it's got better ports and it's good graphically now. But then when the PS2 comes along, the PS2 again completely beats it out of the water in that respect as well. So they've even though they had the head start, it's only served them for so long. And in a market where people already have a console that they've bought not that long ago, they've only been out for like 4 years and people have probably bought them more recently than that.
Completely. I don't think we've got the PlayStation at launch. I think we got it a couple of years in and then had it for years and years. And
they're all a lot cheaper now. All those consoles have dropped their price.
Yeah.
There are these imminent new ones like the PS2 coming out that has a huge amount of hype around it.
Yeah.
And again, Sega can't stack up with their library of games that they have, or even when they do have good games, the style of those games, again, is a lot of ports of arcade fighting games and shit like that people aren't that interested in. So it, again, blows up. And this is when Sega, very quickly they make this decision too, apparently, at the time. I don't really remember it, to be honest, but it was very rapid where they were like, oh, we're done.
So they sold 500,000 Dreamcasts in the first few weeks.
Right.
And then it drops off.
It was very hyped up at the time. And people were super into it and saying, like, here's the next generation. It's here. I remember having a fucking Guinness Book of World Records that, for some reason, had a world record for the Sega Dreamcast being the most advanced video game console.
Oh, right.
Clearly paid content.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I guess that's like the first few weeks is the usses of the late night, like the 30-something-year-olds who've got disposable income and are like, I want to see what this is like.
My British cousins had one. That's where I played a Dreamcast. Was that they this is different cousins to the Atari cousins from before. They had Shenmue and Jet Set Radio and all these big things, but a lot of it was this.
Adam, get in the car. We're going around to your cousin's house. The Dreamcast cousins or the Atari cousins?
At this point, they both suck. Why can't we be related to some Nintendo or PlayStation cousins?
Yeah, I do have weird cousins. I've never... it's not occurred to me before. But a lot of their interest in it was like, look at how good this looks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was this kind of showpiece thing. But then, yeah, we'll talk about it more next episode, but the PS2 comes along, murders this thing because it's got a DVD player in it.
Yep.
It's got better games in launch. It looks better. Everything across the board is kind of better with this thing. And they aggressively market it against the Dreamcast.
Yeah. I really like the overall vibe and the aesthetic of the Dreamcast.
Sure.
I like the name. I like how the controller looked. I like the logo, even though, was it here where the logo was blue instead of red?
Yes.
Yeah, it was definitely blue here.
And I think the swirl goes in the other direction in some regions or something. I don't know why they fuck with it like that. Because
the toilet. It was North Hemisphere, South Hemisphere.
Ah,
rotates the opposite way.
Of course. It went down the toilet. And then when you turned it on, it had like this bling, blong, 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 blong. Like this really little intro. Man, I miss console
intros. I just really liked
intros.
All the stuff about it. Like
We haven't even brought that up, that the PlayStation had the best fucking
that insane,
turn on the console sound. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow!
And then they're like,
tingle, 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 tingle.
Yeah. Just this fucking turning on this jet engine. It was so cool. But like a future hovering jet.
The real like Dolby, remember the thing before movies?
The
like
THX.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
But so yeah, the Dreamcast comes and goes in a similar way to the Saturn, fucking dies, and Sega gets out of the hardware business completely.
Insane that it was that much of a flop.
Yeah.
So
two
quickly.
Flops in a row. That
2 years.
That it sunk them as a console. I remember us talking on the beginning of this pod about when the Switch was being rumoured and Nintendo really on the ropes and it really looking like this could be another Sega where it just fucks them.
How crazy is that to think about now?
Yeah.
Damn.
But we close out the 90s with the death of Sega as a console manufacturer.
Yeah. In the meantime, while all of this has been happening, PCs still exist.
Yeah.
And they make leaps and fucking bounds and strides and jumps during this era. This is like the coolest, one of the coolest PC game times.
It is.
The whole 90s was fucking awesome for PC games in retrospect.
I think, first half of the 90s, it's a different sort of platform and it's not being so directly compared to the consoles because they are innovating. The consoles are innovating and so are the PCs. But I think
at the time, though, when the PS1 came out, that was a bound ahead of what PCs were really doing at the time.
Right.
You still had your 486s and whatever that were like running Doom and shit. But the PS1, the 3D that it could do was kind of ahead of what 3D, what PCs were capable of in terms of 3D.
Yeah. So what are the big PC games of the second half of the 90s?
So around like 95, you get 3D graphics cards start coming out.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's like a huge mess in terms of different manufacturers making different types of things. 3DFX, I think, was the big one.
Oh, yeah.
But there's all sorts of different ones that end up making games look different, having different settings. It's kind of a mess, but it doesn't really matter anymore. But in like 96, I reckon, fucking Quake comes out.
Right.
Which is the biggest thing. It's a very good game. Shooting like first person shooters on the PC in the late 90s are amazing because
your team deathmatch and all of that stuff gets
exactly. Yeah. So this is where online games start kicking off because fucking Half-Life comes out in the late 90s. So Counter-Strike does in like 99.
Oh yeah.
As well, you got Quake 2 and 3, Unreal and Unreal Tournament come out. You got your StarCrafts coming out. You got your fucking...
Diablo. And 2? Were they both...
2, I reckon, was 2000.
Well, let's have a look.
But you're going to have to suck the computer's dick to get that one.
Well.
Yeah, I got that 90s attitude.
I remember seeing...
It is 2000. So Diablo... But Diablo 1, which is a pretty...
Yeah.
Like, it's massive. Blizzard, obviously, are killing it. They are PC gaming for...
Command and Conqueror fucking...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the 2000s is... But then StarCraft is huge, which they put out in 98.
Yeah.
Half-Life, what else you got on the fucking PC during this time? You got some RPGs and shit coming out. You got your Baldur's Gates.
Ah, yes.
And that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Your fucking Fallout 2s.
Sure. Sid Meier has exploded.
He's all over the shop. Yeah. Civilization, are you fucking kidding me? 2000, The Sims.
I was going to say, yeah, so that's the other.
Get more into that. Yeah. But yeah, online shit starts taking off. Not so much in this country because we're a fuckhole for internet.
Yes.
But to this day.
Yeah.
Over in places that are capable of it, you know, online games, shooters in particular, and then RTSs, real-time strategy games for those of you playing at home. A huge,
yeah,
and it becomes enormous. It's kind of Wild Westy. It's all like different, like Game Spy shows up to try and be like this weird way of coagulating servers together. But they're all over the shop. Forums are weird. Everyone's all over the place with multiplayer things and PC games during this time. You could do a whole other podcast about this, because then the Dreamcast had a fucking like 36 whatever K modem in it.
That's right, yeah.
And there were ports of Quake 3 and stuff, and like Phantasy Star Online was over there. EverQuest was a huge 90s PC game.
Oh, yes.
That comes out.
Yeah.
The format of what games are now is very much established during this time, because all your fucking Fortnites and PUBGs and whatever, it all goes back to basically Quake.
Mm.
That's the first massive one where modding becomes a huge thing as well, which then leads to a lot of indie development and then full studios being made out of these modders getting together during this time. Modding isn't so much a big thing anymore. People still do it for lots of games, but the way that mods were in like the late 90s, early 2000s, they were fucking enormous.
Yeah.
They were whole different other games. Like Counter-Strike is considered a game. It was a fucking mod for Half-Life. It's nuts to think about. So yeah, the PC games were all over the shop. They were very cool. Well, no, they weren't. They were fucking nerdy. It was the nerdiest place in the world.
It totally was. Yeah.
Everything looked shitty. Like these beige fucking computers looked awful. Mm-hmm. Big fucking CRT monitors.
We never had a computer at home that could play many games on it. Like we didn't really upgrade. But my big memory of PC games around this era is like all the consoles, uniform boxes. You know, you go into a store, all the PlayStation boxes look the same. My memory of going through the PC aisle is that there seemed to be no, just if you make a game, you get to decide how big the box is.
Yeah.
You know, these like crazy, remember like the kind of fold-out flap of like, with the Velcro, like,
you get to decide how big it is, and everyone has made the decision enormous.
Exactly.
As big as we can afford.
Yes.
So huge. But you get those big, thick fucking manuals in them sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duke Nukem 3D, there's a game that came out. There's so many good fucking late 90s PC games, there's no way we're going to touch them all.
Unreal Tournament was the one that I had of all of these. I never was a Quake guy. Like I said last time, I was never a Doom guy, but Unreal Tournament was...
I'm the Quake guy. Bang, or whatever, you know, instead of duh, they shoot guns. That's my parody. That's my parody of the week.
But yeah, Unreal Tournament, like, basically was, I think, I guess, like, Counter-Strike played for years.
Yeah.
It was modded. There was different maps and stuff, and stuff was done to it visually, but it was a game that was played for like 7 years or something.
Mm.
People still play these fucking games now.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Some of the mods from them, like Team Fortress was a mod that was made for Quake 1 that then became, you know, over years and years and years, Team Fortress 2, and then that kind of led into the Overwatches and shit of the world being made.
Yeah.
The genealogy of how... pretty much Quake, which like came from Doom and everything.
Yeah.
But the way that the online coding was done in Quake was in some way revolutionary, where it was trying to predict where you were gonna be, because the internet was so
combat
slow.
Lag. Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
It had algorithms in it that were saying like, if they're moving this direction, they might be here. So kind of trying to predict for every possibility of where they might be, so that it didn't actually have to update you with the information coming from the internet. It could figure it out itself on your computer, which was more, which was quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
Really clever shit being done. Like all of online gaming started now pretty much, and we had this in the 90s, but it pretty much happened during this last half in the 90s there. Yeah. And that's what most people see games as being now.
Yeah.
And shit like speedrunning started. It was called Quake Done Quick originally.
Mm-hmm.
Like streaming and sharing of videos of games started on PCs during this time.
Yeah.
It's wild how much of it was same as a lot of things, where it was these dorky little fucking nerds doing it and everyone's like, fuck you. You don't play games competitively. That's then a word that we said in the 90s. And then it turned into this, you know, huge fucking thing that it is today, where if someone isn't into it and wants to play like a single player game, they're like, fuck you, yeah. You nerd.
Yeah.
Some word we're not going to be allowed to say in the 2030s. So, yeah, it's cool what was happening during PC games, but the scope of it is too large to go into during this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I also think probably the best examples of those kind of games haven't actually been made yet. They are made right. Probably in the early 2000s.
There's some big fucking deals that happen then, because a lot of these are harder to go back to now because they're so prototypey. They're yes. So early informative
yeah.
That there's not an enormous amount of reason other than historical interest to go back and play Quake over something different.
Yeah,
what? But a more modern. But no, it's still good. But yeah, there's other versions of things that get made, and there's also 100 million like copies of these games that come out around the same time too.
Yes,
that are peppered all through this.
Yeah, but I feel like yeah, the big tentpole PC games that I think of
yeah.
In this era of my life come out in our next episode.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like Half-Life. That's a good, fun game. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. The next episode will be good as well. I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, early 2000s. Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up for this week. That brings us to the end of the 90s.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can find us.
Y2K's coming for us. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Better stock up the second fridge with supplies.
It seems silly right now to make fun of a global scare that people ended up fixing.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't nothing. It's that they fixed it.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't do it. If people fix things, doesn't mean it didn't happen or we overreacted.
Yeah.
True. Important to point out at the end of our episode. Yes.
Head to filthycasuals.com.au. You can find links to our socials and our Patreon where we're doing an extra episode every week. If you support the show, we very much appreciate you chipping in. You've also got our YouTube channel that's got our Let's Plays on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for the start of the 2000s. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
suck my dick, teach.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.